everyone, and welcome to Monster Mania Radio, Episode 2. And first off, I want to thank everyone for the, the accolades,
Dave. Yeah, it was overwhelming. I couldn't believe the feedback.
The response.
That we got from the first show. It was much more than I ever expected.
We are getting closer to Monster Mania, which is going to be August 17th through the 19th in Cherry Hill. Plus, don't forget, we will be in
Hunt Valley,
the end of September, September 28th through the 30th, is that
28th
right?
28th to the 30th, yes.
Yeah, I'm already excited. Hey, don't forget, you can find out all the information that you want about Monster Mania by visiting monstermania.net. You can look for all the guests, the latest info, join the forums page. Plus, if you're interested and you would like, you can look for us each and every Friday at monstermaniaradio.net. Plus, while you're on iTunes, you can subscribe, rate, and review the show. Look for us on Twitter at Rob Dimension, at MonsterManiaCon. Let us know what you think. If you would like to advertise with us and or have questions, you can visit MonsterManiaRadio@gmail.com.
Also, Rob, I wanted to mention that both shows, The Film Room, will be sponsored by The Drive-In Horror Show.
Okay.
Which is a release from Midnight Releasing. I wanted to thank those people for their sponsorship. It's an anthology five-story film. I love anthology films, so right up my alley, and we welcome them to their sponsorship.
Awesome. Hey, don't forget, we'll also be showing The Cabal Cut. Last week we talked to Nicholas Vince, who played Chatterer in the Hellraiser film. We'll be showing The Cabal Cut from Nightbreed, which I believe is, you know, a whole different cut of the film,
yeah,
so I'm really excited to check it out.
It's the third time, I believe, it's being shown in the U.S., first time in the Northeast. Really looking forward to it, and the runtime on it is much longer than the original. This is something to really see if you're a Nightbreed fan.
I'm excited. Is it going to be in the main room?
Yeah, we're going to show it twice over the weekend. It's going to be in the main room for one of the days, and it's going to be in the second film room the second day. We still have to work out the time, so that'll be on the website.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, a few years ago, Dave, you know, one of the main questions that everyone always asks, a few years ago, Monster Mania made its trip up north.
Yes.
And had a convention in Connecticut. And, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot today, Dave.
Uh-uh.
I get asked all the time, when is Monster Mania going back to Connecticut? And what's the lowdown?
Well, it's been a much-asked question, like you said. We love to go into it. It was in Cromwell. It was a suburb of Hartford. Loved the people. Loved the turnout. We had a problem with the hotel.
But you did have a great lineup.
That show was Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. We had Robert Englund.
Uh-huh.
We had Derek Mears. And we had Bruce Campbell.
Right.
So it was, you know, we really tried to bring what Monster Mania is up to Connecticut. And, you know, the response was good. What people don't know, and the behind the scenes on it, was the nightmare that it was, literally, to put the show together behind the scenes. In the agreement that we had with the hotel, it was always understood that we were going to pay, you know, the for the rooms and all the expenses, we were going to pay that on Monday after the show. Well, about 9 days prior to the show, I got an email from the hotel basically saying that they wanted in excess of $40,000 paid in advance, or else they weren't going to open up the show.
Wow.
So, I mean, at this point, you know, the vendors have bought tables, the fans have made arrangements to get there and bought tickets, the flights were purchased for the stars, the advertisement's been made. I mean, all the money that came in has gone out on, you know, the expenses of the show between advertising and flights and,
sure,
you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I was really, you know, between a rock and a hard place. You know, the amount of money that they were asking for was way inflated, first of all. And secondly, I mean, it went against the agreement that I had with the hotel. The person that was the salesperson that had dealt with me, she even was apologizing for, you know, the information that she was giving me from the general manager. Her name was Linda Fish. And not too long after the show, she got fired.
Sorry.
Yeah. But, I mean, she did everything she could to push it through. And then 2 days before the show, I'm driving up to do a television appearance to promote the show, and I get this email saying that not only do they want, you know, the other money in advance, but they wanted between $5,000 and $6,000 more for the audio-visual, all this to be paid up front.
Wow.
Which was just, I mean, we got the show.
It's paralyzing, seriously.
I said to the guy, well, you know, he's threatened to not open the doors. And I said, well, I wouldn't want to be you when, you know, hundreds of horror fans can't get into the show that they've just paid for.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we went through with the show. We bit the bullet. But as far as me ever doing business with that person again, it's not going to happen. I mean, my opinion is if you, like anything else, you know, if it's a horror convention, if it's a lawyer convention, no matter what it is, if you give your word that things are going to be a certain way, then you need to honor your word. And to pull that kind of a deal on me at the last minute when they knew what that was going to cause, I mean, it was, that's not, wasn't an accident.
Now, Monster Mania has grown over the years. It has become, it's part of New Jersey now. It really is. I mean, for horror fans, we, you know, everyone
horror,
goes...
Horror fans.
I'm sorry. I don't know why...
When I heard the broadcast of the first show, when I heard you say Monster Mania Horror Convention, you know, my kids were like, Dad, what happened? I'm like, no, it's still a monster show.
I will definitely be there for that one. All right, so, you know, everyone comes to New Jersey for it, and then you also now you have, you know, Hunt Valley, which you've had for a few years. And then you tried Connecticut. When, you know, I'm sure that you get offered other places. You know, they want Monster Mania to go elsewhere. They want to see you at other conventions. I'm sure you get offered tons of other conventions, even partnerships. When you get that, what runs through your head? And there has to be a level of a criteria that goes on because you know how you run your show. But yet everyone has a philosophy on what they feel is the best way to run a convention.
Right. In the past, I had put on the Dee Snider Van Helsing's Curse concert at the Keswick Theater in Pennsylvania. And it, after I signed on for it, I found out it was a co-production between me and this other company. Dee had come to me. He wanted me to sponsor the show because he liked the way we do things.
So it was going to be a Monster Mania...
It was going to have a Monster Mania flair to it. I mean, it was still a concert. You know, it was the whole, you know, typical thing. But he wanted us to add what Monster Mania is to it. But after I signed on, I found out that it basically what I wanted to do had to get approved by somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And everything I wanted to do just got shot down. 90% of what I wanted to do got shot down. So, I mean, I've had offers in the past... to work with other conventions. Famous Monsters did a convention out in Indianapolis in 2010. This person, Phil Kim, had bought Famous Monsters magazine and wanted to do a convention. At the time, he was going to do it with one of the talent agents, and then something happened between him and the talent agent, and he had those two parted ways, but Phil was still going to continue with the show. So he contacted me, and he said I was the person that was most recommended to him by other people in the business.
You have to appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I had a lot of conversation with him. But what it came down to for me was, I told him, I'll be glad to help you. I'll be glad to work with you. You know, going back to, you know, my childhood, Famous Monsters was one of the magazines my dad brought home every Sunday, you know, for me to look at. So, you know, it would have really meant a lot for me, honestly, to tie my name with Famous Monsters. But they were doing it in Indianapolis. And... Horror Hound conventions were already taking place in Indianapolis, and I told him I'm glad to work with them, but I can't do it there, because my feeling is if a person for the promoter, I mean, it's a matter of respect. I wouldn't want to go into someone else's town and open a convention there.
You don't want to go into someone else's town.
Right. I mean, like I said, it's a matter of respect. I mean, you know, Horror Hound's been doing it a few years. I know Horror Hound had split off with one of the people that was involved, you know, originally with the Famous Monsters. But I didn't want to get involved in it because I didn't want to do that. You know, I was offered by the person that Famous Monsters had split with, who's a talent agent. I was offered to team with him, you know, and to put a show in Chicago and Los Angeles and Indianapolis. And, you know, again, I didn't want to do that. Out of respect for the people that already had longtime shows running there. You know, Mike Kurz does the Flashback Weekend in Chicago. I know Mike. I've talked to Mike, you know, a lot of times on the phone. I wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, bringing a show to Mike's area. I mean, there'd have to be resentment, I would think. You know
what
I mean? And I've known Mike for a long time. You know, I've known Kevin from Chiller for a long time. I've gotten offers plenty of times from nearby hotels where Chiller's at, you know, to bring Monster Mania there. And it's just, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, it, you know, it'd be nice to have to grow the Monster Mania brand and to go in different places. But to me, it's a matter of respect for the people, you know, that have already been doing shows in a certain area for a certain amount of time. I just don't want to do that. I don't want to step on their toes. I mean,
right.
You know, they've carved their niche. They've found their spot. You know, if I was going to do another show in another area, I would want to do it in an area that no one's been before. You know, like that's, to me, that's the excitement of doing a show, is to just do something that's totally your own and not so much, you know, trying to ride, you know, on something that someone else is doing. It's just my opinion. It's no judgment of anyone else. It's just what I would feel comfortable with. Like, I guess each promoter's got to, you know, make that decision for himself. It's not something I would want to do.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I don't blame you, to be totally honest. I think that what that shows is it shows that you are well, respectful, you know, and you understand the battle that promoters have to deal with. You know, I'm not a stranger to promoting. I actually promoted wrestling shows in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, 2001 to 2003. We had TV, and, you know, you're up against, you know, competition, and you know, but for what our always philosophy was, if we worry about ourselves and we put on the best show possible, which you really do, hopefully, you know, people will see the difference. And I think people do.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Thanks.
I mean, you know, I mean, people can say, oh, you know, Rob is just blowing smoke because I'm sitting next to you. But, you know, I mean, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to, you know, I think that you guys have, I've never seen anyone, you know, unhappy. Every time that, you know, and I'm always hovering around everywhere and I watch and see what goes on. And
you outside the men's room? That
it
time?
Was. I'm always I'm always looking. I'm always looking.
That's what I was.
I'm looking
of.
For the horror convention. But no, I think that you know, your show is growing every year.
Yeah.
You know, it is growing, and you're at the capacity of what you can be, and the hotel is fantastic, and they've opened it up. You know, so I'm curious as to what your opinion might be when. Let's say someone's traveling from out of town, and they stay at the hotel. Have you ever heard any stories?
We've had in the past, before we had the Riverside Pavilion that we got for the first time and ongoing last year. They used to have weddings out there. I mean, we had Monster Mania conventions when literally there was, you know, an Indian wedding going on
next door.
Yeah, at the Riverside. I mean, I can remember looking out the front doors, and there were like elephants. Literally.
Really?
Yeah, going across the parking lot.
So you're saying like legitimate like Indian ceremony?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the weddings were very, very long. I think it's like a multiple day type of event for them.
And elaborate, apparently.
Yeah, very much.
Wow.
And then, I mean, we've had instances where the bride and groom came out and the bride was thrilled and was getting her pictures taken with some of the movie stars.
Uh-huh.
We've had instances where the bride was not so thrilled. You know, that, you know, zombies are walking around, you know, the hotel that's she's having her wedding at. So it's been, we've had it both ways. Fortunately, we've basically taken every inch of meeting space at the hotel now that they've given us the Riverside, thankfully, and helped us grow the hotel. It helped us grow the show because the crowds keep increasing, and we were outgrowing the hotel the way it was. So by getting the Riverside, and we put most of the stars out there. You know, it gave us, it basically doubled the space of the show, which was vital to the growth and continuation of the show.
Hey, today on today's show, we're actually going to be talking to Angus Grimm, who was the tall man in Phantasm.
Yes.
Are you a fan of Phantasm?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah,
I saw Phantasm back in the days when they had drive-ins, and I saw it as part of like a double or triple feature. And always liked the first film, and you know, the series has grown. There's rumors that there's going to be a new one. We'll talk to Angus and find out.
Yeah. Now, do you think that film was a product of the time, or do you think that there's a possibility if it was ever to be remade that it could be remade and fit into current today, or is it a film of the 70s, 80s, you know, atmosphere?
I mean, I'm sure at some point someone will try to remake it. You know, again, the success of remakes has been very, very spotty. I can't think of too many that I actually enjoy the remake of. I would think it's kind of set in the time period that, you know, it came out at the right time.
Uh-huh. For what it was. Agree with that.
I'd honestly hate to see someone else be the tall man. You know, I prefer them as they are.
Hey, that's cool. Hey, when we come back, we will be talking to the tall man. And don't go anywhere.
Phantasm. Is it a nightmare? Is it alive? Whatever it is, if this one doesn't scare you, you're already dead. Phantasm. Rated R. 17, not admitted without parent.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Monster Mania Radio. With us today on the phone, we have the tall man from the Phantasm film series, otherwise known as Angus Scrimm. Hi, Angus. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, David. I'm proud to be one of your first guests since you launched the series.
It's my pleasure, Angus. You know, we've had you with the show quite a few times, and you are a gentleman. It's a pleasure to have you with the shows, and definitely one of my favorite guests at the shows. It's always great to see you.
We have a wonderful time each time. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed both Baltimore and Orange Hill. Orange Hill, New Jersey, right?
We're at Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Yes. I get my film mixed up, don't I?
Angus, I had a question for you. How did you come up with...
From New Jersey and all the states surrounding, and sometimes as far away as Japan, I think we had.
Oh, yeah, and you've just done a show in Germany not too long ago, correct?
I did, yes. The Lord, I can't think of that man's name off the top of my head, but it was just outside Essen and Dusseldorf, two German cities that are side by side in a small town. Really, it was great fun. Great fun, and people from all over Europe, so it was a nice event also.
But, yeah, it's amazing. There's just horror fans everywhere, and I think... You know, the growth of the horror convention business just seems to be nonstop, and it's mainly because that when the fans get to meet stars such as yourself, they're just totally blown away by your graciousness and your kindness towards them, and I think it's a treat to meet, you know, stars that take the fans as seriously as you do.
I can't imagine anybody being kinder and more gracious than the fans are.
Angus, I had a question. Angus Scrimm is not... really your actual birth name? How did you come up with the stage name Angus Scrimm?
Dave, I can't recall how I came up with it. It was a long time ago. But I found an old notebook I used to keep. You know, for 2 years I was convalescing in bed from tuberculosis, way back during World War II, when tuberculosis was much more prevalent. Nowadays it's almost a forgotten disease. And I used to jot down ideas. I thought I was going to be an actor and a writer. And looking back through one of those old, I think, 1943 journals, I found on one page the name Angus Scrimm written down. So obviously that had occurred to me as a possible character name for a short story, I would think. But I remembered it when I was auditioning for a play at the old Colbert Theater in Hollywood and decided to use it as a stage name there so that my friends at USC wouldn't know I was doing a play off campus. It was kind of verboten to do plays off campus. I don't know why, but I did, and I knew it would be reviewed, and so if they reviewed Angus Scrimm, nobody would know it was me. So I used it then, and then I've used it off and on ever since. Obviously, when Phantasm came up, I thought, I don't want the guy name. My family name is Guy, G-U-Y. I don't want the guy name to resonate throughout the rest of history in the way Karloff and Lugosi and Chaney do. So my other relatives might not appreciate that. So I remembered Angus Scrimm, and I thought, that's perfect. And Coscarelli thought it was perfect. Don Coscarelli, who creates the Phantasm series. So we used that. And, of course, Phantasm was a huge hit. So my agent said, well, you have to be Angus Scrimm now. You can't be Rory Guy anymore. So with that edict, I became Angus Scrimm.
How did you first get cast to be the character of the tall man?
I had done a picture called Jim, the World's Greatest, which was Don Coscarelli's first film. He was 19 years old. Dad, who was an investments counselor, raised the money for it. And Charles Champlin, who was then critic for the L.A. Times, saw it, recommended it to Lou Wasserman at Universal and Sid Sheinberg, and they bought it and released it. And then I did that as Rory Guy, but then after then Don decided to create a horror film because he had so much success with a horror film and a picture called Kenny and Company, a horror scene in it, that he wanted to see if he could make a film that would have a screen every 3 minutes. So he came up with, he devised Phantasm and immediately thought of me as the tall man. Heaven knows why. I always look very nice to the fellow.
And usually you wear suits that fit.
I usually wear suits that fit. they cut that down. His mother, Kate Coscarelli, designed the costume, and she very shrewdly made it like a stovepipe so that I would look preternaturally skinny, and with the tall shoes, of course, made me look even taller. So
when the film was first released, did you have any idea it was going to become the icon in horror films that it has?
Well, I just knew that it was great fun to make, and I knew there were some really crunchy scenes in it as we filmed them. And one always hopes, but the fact that it became the legend it has become, no, I don't think any of us anticipated that. We just hoped we'd have a hit that would do good box office 2 or 3 weeks in the summer and make us all famous. And but even that, of course, we weren't convinced would happen. It certainly happened with a great big bang.
Yeah. Was the intention originally to continue on with the series, or when the film was first made, was it basically done as just a one-shot?
Don, AFCO Embassy, which released Phantasm, sent Don and me all over the United States to major cities to publicize the film on its openings. And on those airplane trips, fueled by the free booze in first-class cabin, Don and I would have a lengthy conversation and get to know each other really well. And at that time, he said, you know, if this is a hit that it looks like it's going to be now, we will probably wind up doing a sequel. But he said, I want to do something totally different first because I don't want to get typed in Hollywood as a horror filmmaker. So indeed he did. He did Beastmaster, which was a huge success. Also in the sword and sorcery vein. But yes, he did talk then of possibly doing a sequel.
Wow.
I had no idea it would take, what was it, 9 years before we actually got around to Phantasm 2.
There's been rumors that there's the possibility of a new Phantasm film in the series. Can you shed any light on that?
Well, I've always said no whenever anybody has asked me that after Phantasm. I said, probably not. After Phantasm 2, I said, no, there won't be another. And I've always been proved wrong, so I will say yes. I think definitely there will be another, but in fact, I know Don has been experimenting, actually shooting things occasionally over the last couple of years. And I even participated in one day on some experimental stuff. Now, whether any of that, which I thought was pretty good, by the way, he's working on some ideas with a fellow named Dave Hartman. They're still tinkering with it. So I would say if they come up with the ideas that they like, then there will definitely be one. Problem is, Dave, so many of the fans want to see Phantasm go into the tall man's world in the fifth one. They want many, many more explanations than have been given. My feeling is that the success of Phantasm is because it poses so many questions to which there are no answers. I think subliminally in everybody's mind when they see a Phantasm film is that they're watching the specter of death when they see the tall man. I think we're dealing with death. Everybody wants to know what death is and whether there's an afterlife. But if we try to show that,
I totally agree.
Some pretty world-shattering answers, you know.
Exactly.
I just don't think it's there. I just don't think you can do that. I think the major religions of the world have tried to tell us what happens in the afterlife. But these major religions were created by the old shamans, the tribes, and the early civilizations, and they didn't know. But they came up with some ideas that have been pretty popular with the general public throughout history. And we now have Buddhism, and we have Mohammedanism, and we have Christianity, and heaven knows what else. I think there's even something called Scientology. I don't know whether it tells you what happens in an afterlife or not. But Tom Cruise and John Travolta are built on it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think the reason, and another thing is, if you went to the tall man's world, imagine the cost of creating that. I don't think that could be done on what's considered a reasonable phantasm budget. It would go into the hundreds of millions of dollars. And nobody wants to invest $100 million in the fifth episode of a low-budget franchise. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I know about you that many may not know is the fact that you won a Grammy Award. Would you like to reveal how that came about?
I earned a living for about 30 years. In addition to acting, I, in and out of the Capitol Records building, sometimes on staff, sometimes as a freelance writer, doing the information that's printed on the back of the old LP jackets and in the compact disc booklets. And believe it or not, that's one of the categories in the Grammy Awards, Best Album Note. So I got maybe 6 or 7 nominations. And one year, they actually gave me the darn thing. For an album called Eric Wolfgang Korngold's Violin Concerto and some other compositions by Korngold. I think it was 1976, Ancient History.
That was a good year.
I still have that Grammy, and it's looking out of the china cabinet in my dining room right now, but it's in two pieces because I think 1992 or something, we had a little earthquake here in California. It fell off a low ledge and shattered into two pieces. And I called the Academy, and they said, well, we'll give you another one if you want to send us a check for $350 and return the original.
That was gracious.
To do that, it's sort of like this way. I can boast that I have 2 Grammys.
Well, Angus, I wanted to thank you very much for your time. Welcome to Monster Mania Radio. Thank you for being a part of it, and thank you for being a part of Monster Mania altogether.
And please don't forget to plug my 2 new pictures. John Dies at the End, in which I have a cameo. But what a terrific picture that's going to be! Be released by the end of the year or the first of next year. A Don Coscarelli production directed, written, and edited by him. And the other is a picture called Disciples by Joe Hollow, which has an all-star horror cast. Linnea Quigley, Tony Todd, Bill Moseley, Brink Stevens, just all kinds of Camden Toy, all kinds of people out of the genre.
That's has that film been shot yet?
Oh, it's completed. It's in late post-production.
Oh.
And it's about a group of devils, the sub-devils to Lucifer, who are plotting to depose him and put one of their number in this place, and then they start killing each other off so that the competition will be less.
And what's your role in that film?
I play the eldest of the sub-devils, the one the others all look to with some respect.
That sounds really interesting.
It's kind of a fascinating film. It's sort of a Dallas type evening primetime soap opera, but with devils instead of oil barons. And then there's a subplot with the human beings who get enmeshed in the machinations of the devils. How do you like that? Enmeshed in the machinations.
Wow, you can tell you wrote liner notes.
Frank Sinatra is enmeshed in the machinations of Cole Porter. Well, we'll talk about Miles Davis next time.
Yeah, definitely. You know my love for Miles Davis.
Thank you for your call and for inviting me to be part of this show.
Oh, thank you, Angus. It's always a pleasure. And we'll be right back with more Monster Mania Radio.
Evil will have its finest hour when the grave opens and Count Yorga returns to walk among the living.
Wouldn't it be something if vampires did exist?
They do. Not in the classical sense, of course, but there are those who thirst for blood. In fact, thrive on it.
Can the dead desire, can the lifeless lust, can a vampire fall in love and give a normal kiss?
Cynthia, what if I told you I possess the power to give you eternal life? Right now, this very moment.
I'd say you were marvelously mad.
Count Yorga returns from the land of the dead to seek a mate from among the living. This time it might be you.
One never knows when he might encounter some of the more unusual truths that exist in this world.
See the return of Count Yorga, the most unearthly love story ever filmed. Here is a vampire picture you can really get your teeth into. In color, rated GP.
All right, guys, we are back after talking to Angus Grimm from Phantasm, and now it's time for some horror news.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, so last week, The Walking Dead issue 100 hit, and I want to just talk about this briefly, and then, you know, during the commercial, we had talked a little bit about comics, and I said, hey, you know, I want to talk to you a little bit about comics. Last week for a Walking Dead 100, they actually released 15 covers.
That's all?
15 covers. Is that too much?
Well, it depends, Rob.
15 covers. So you know that...
Were they all by the same artist, or was it 15
different
artists?
Oh, I'm sure that it was different artists. Yeah. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm sure that it was a variety of different artists. I would also assume that they will release a comic called Walking Dead 100 Cover Edition, which will have all the covers probably in variant art as well. I'm sure there's some that were less produced more than others. Like all comics.
There's always going to be that chase cover.
I'm a big fan of Robert Kirkman. We talked about it last week. And so I had said to you, you know, what else do you read? So what other comics titles?
Comic-wise, I'm very vanilla, as far as my comics go. You know, other than Walking Dead, it's like I stuck with the old DC stuff. The Dark Knight, Green Lantern, mm-hmm. Flash, Spider-Man from, you know, Marvel. Thor, but for the most part, like the really, like I know there's all these kind of comics out there that, you know, are very horror oriented and all those things. But
when they reset the universe in DC, what was your overall opinion about that? You know, if you've been reading for a long time, you've grown accustomed to the way the character's universe was. Now everything is kind of started over, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they did it, but, I mean, to me, I was a big fan of, what was it, Detective Comics, I think it was like uh-huh. one of the longest-running comic series.
Also, why DC is DC.
Right.
About that. Comic knowledge.
Wow. You just looked that up, folks.
I did. Thanks for exposing me.
To me, it was sort of disrespectful to their own heritage, you know, to a degree. I mean, to me, you always stand on the shoulders of the people that went before you. And I thought it was a bit almost insulting to the people, you know, that had worked for them for all those years to keep that title going, to all of a sudden start all over. I mean, I get why they did it, and, you know, I'm sure it was newsworthy that they decided to, you know, put an end to that run. And to be honest, I mean, some of the titles needed to be rejuvenated, but I don't know if I totally agree with what they did.
Well, I mean, you know,
what's your thoughts of it?
I think it needed to be done. I think that some characters had, you know, the comic universe, it's always a little bit too easy for comic creators to go back and rewrite history time and time and time and time again. And I think that when they said that they were really more or less going to have a total universe rewrite, you know, erasing everything that happened and starting from scratch, maybe that's the better way to do it. I also heard that there were rumors that Marvel had talked about doing it. Marvel has tried to...
Well, Marvel aggravated a lot of people when they had the whole Spider-Man clone story.
I forget how it all played out, but it turned out that for I don't know how many issues running, that when people thought they were reading The Adventures of Peter Parker,
yeah,
it turns out they were reading The Adventures of the Peter Parker clone.
Right.
So I know that annoyed a lot of people.
But I think that's comics. You know, speaking of comics, I wanted to get into Guillermo del Toro is actually in the process, before we get to a specific rim, because I'm a huge Kaju fan. He's actually...
Bless you.
He's actually proposed to write a new Hulk series.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. I read about it today. He sent out the script, and they're in development for... I'm curious as to what kind of Hulk he's going to create. You know, he's most known for Hellboy, Hellboy 2... Pan's Labyrinth. Big fan of all three, especially Hellboy 2 and Pan's Labyrinth. I love those. Visually amazing. Now he's actually in the process of filming a movie that news had broke last week at San Diego Comic-Con about Pacific Rim, which is more or less like a mecha robot versus the Godzilla-type Kaiju series. I'm a big fan of the Mobile Suit Gundam series that was out in the 70s from Japan. And this was more or less the story of, you know, since then you've had Mobile Suit Gundam, you've had Neon Genesis Evangelion, you've had a bunch of other shows that are similar to that where kids are the pilots of these giant robots. This one is going to be more adult-oriented, where they'll have the adults be the pilots, and they're going to face the Kaiju-type monsters. Now, Kaiju, if you look at it from an American aspect, actually translates to giant monster. You know, we're familiar with, like, Godzilla, Gamera.
Rodan.
Also shows like Johnny Sacco and his Flying Robot, Ultraman. They've had so Space Giants. They've had so many of these shows over the years and movies. You know, Toho had... kind of stepped away from the Godzilla series and they weren't making anything anymore. Now there's talks they're going to because Legendary Pictures has announced that they're in the process of making a new Godzilla film.
Not starring Matthew Broderick?
No, hopefully not. We could get into that a whole
nother time. Yeah, that could be a whole other episode.
Were you a fan of that?
No.
Now, are you a Godzilla purist?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
So you enjoyed watching it on Saturday or Sunday mornings or afternoons?
I saw it in the theaters.
Did you really?
Yeah, I made my father sit through King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, I love that
Three times in the same day. We went there like the 11 o'clock show and we came out like 8 o'clock at night.
The only Godzilla films that I've seen in theater was Godzilla 2000 when they released that here in the U.S.
I thought that was good.
Godzilla 2000?
Yeah, I like that.
I'm a big fan of the Millennium series of Godzilla. Godzilla 2000, to me, is the best suit. I like his purple dorsal, like the back fins that he has.
I bet you do.
Oh, I do. And just, I think, overall, he looks... It's a modern version of Godzilla. I'm a big fan also of the guys within the rubber suits. I don't know how Del Toro's going to handle that. I'm sure it's going to be CGI.
Is there? Does he have the rights to use the Godzilla?
No.
I mean, it's going to be...
It's going to be his own type.
Monsters, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be his own type.
I had heard about the robots was it's going to be... The robots are going to be piloted by two people.
Correct. And they're going to be on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
They're going to be connected through their minds like two people.
Like you and I.
Oh, but we could go pilot,
take down a couple,
and save the world.
Yes, let's go do it.
Okay, as soon as someone provides us with a giant robot, all they really have shown is the. I've seen a couple pictures that they've shown, which I haven't seen any pictures yet of the suit, of the mecha suit that the robot. Nor have I seen any pictures of the Kaiju monsters. But now this is what I like about it the most. Is he could have chosen the words giant monsters, but he didn't. He chose, in every write-up, he chose the word Kaiju, which shows to me that he is very... he's going to stick to the basics of a Godzilla-type film. And I'm not saying Godzilla is the best. There's tons of those type movies out there. There's some that still are made. You know, I think that Gamera 3 might be one of the best... Kaiju type films. I still
watch. I didn't
see
that one, Rob.
It's really good.
Yeah.
There's another one after it called Gamera the Brave, where he then goes back to being for the kids. You know, in the 50s or 60s movies, he was always for the kids. Gamera was, the Flying Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a big fan, and I really look forward to it. If anyone can pull this off, I got to think he's the guy to do it.
Well, he was. His name has long been tied to a remake of Universal Monsters' Creature from the Black Lagoon. He's a huge fan of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. His name was bandied about in regards to it for years, and I don't know where that stands now. I guess that's totally...
Now, it's funny you say that. He actually is scheduled to direct 4 films for Universal, and the main one is going to be Frankenstein.
Really?
Yes. So, I mean, you know, there you have it. He's a big fan of the Boris Karloff version of Frankenstein. He's actually said it on record that he... he wants to combine the elements of Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein, without making it just like a classical myth of the monster. The best moments for him, from what he says, that are from the novel have yet to be filmed.
Hmm.
So, this...
Yeah, I read the novel. I wasn't a big fan of the novel. The one I thought was close to what the novel was the one that had Robert De Niro in it.
Yeah.
Overall, I wasn't all that enamored about the film, but I mean, I think that followed the book, you know, fairly close. I grew up with the Boris Karloff Frankenstein, so that's...
Did you know that Thomas Edison made a Frankenstein movie?
I actually saw that at Monster Bash in Pittsburgh.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It was 1910.
Yeah.
And is it...
It's a short...
It's like 13 minutes, is that right?
It's about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have not seen it, but of all people, Thomas Edison. Let's move on. Reanimator musical coming to New York. What are your thoughts?
When I first heard about it, I was like, wow, that's interesting. But then as I did some research on it, they've already shown it. It's already played out in L.A. for a bit in 2010. I'm sorry, 2011. It opened up at the Hollywood Steve Allen Theater. What I didn't know is that it's written and directed by Stuart Gordon.
Right.
And the more I read about it, the more... When I first heard about it, I was like, oh, that should be interesting. But now I'm going to make my way up to New York to go see it. I've seen some snippets of it on online, and it looks really good. The guy playing Dr. West was very funny, yet very convincing. And I'm looking forward to seeing it.
What are your thoughts on Stuart Gordon as far as his films? More or less, The Reanimator. Are you a fan of The Reanimator?
Yeah, I did. I liked The Reanimator very much.
Jeffrey Combs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I there's even talk still today of another remake of that or another Jeffrey Combs.
Gordon wants to, the plans sometime in the future are to make the next in the line of the franchise of Reanimator, and he wants to put Dr. West in the White House, so that could be interesting, but his plot line is to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Combs was just at Hunt Valley last summer.
Yeah.
I hosted the Q&A with them and Barbara Crampton, who is fantastic. Can I tell you, that lady looks fantastic.
Yeah, she's really, and super nice person.
Very nice. We've stayed friends somewhat. But so there you have it, the Reanimator musical. And of all people, George Wendt is actually is part of it.
And I had read an interview with Stuart Gordon. He said Wendt is a really big horror fan.
Oh, really?
Which, yeah, I kind of... When I saw his name attached to it, I'm like, wow, what's this going to be?
Yeah.
It made sense when you read what Stuart Gordon says about Wendt. And if you see some of the... There's like small, like maybe 1 minute, 2 minute segments online. It's interesting.
Hey, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more horror news. See whatever, you know, you have... As an agenda, because I do want to talk about Ron Perlman when we come back.
Okay.
Because that is probably one of the best stories for the horror community this year.
Yeah, it totally shows a lot of heart.
Hey, we'll be right back. We are back for the final segment on Monster Mania Radio. Don't forget, look for us on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review the show. We greatly appreciate it. Before we left the last segment, I talked about Ron Perlman. Now, Ron Perlman, for the last week, has been all over the internet horror sites because of the fact that he did something that was fantastic. There was a little boy that had leukemia. He was 6 years old. And Ron Perlman, who is most known, I would sue, in later years, for being Hellboy.
Yeah.
He was able to get the Hellboy costume together and wear the costume for this boy to make this little boy's wish. And what they did is they actually went one step further and dressed this little boy up as Hellboy also. If there is any one foundation that just makes these kids' dreams come true, it's Make-A-Wish, and my hat's off to him for doing that.
Yeah, they said he spent hours in the makeup chair. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a slapdash version of Hellboy. It was, you know, the full costume, full makeup, full effects. I mean, it was, they said it took hours for him to do that, and the boy had written in that he wanted to be made up like Hellboy, so when Ron Perlman found out about it, he went the extra step and said, you know, I'm going to get made up like Hellboy for him. And there's a lot of pictures of the two of them on the internet.
Yeah,
it's really, really, I mean, it's a heartwarming story.
Sometimes people go out of their way, and I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan
of that. I'd like to see a whole lot more of that, actually.
All right, so what else would you like to talk about today, sir, as we are wrapping up?
One thing that's coming out, it's an interesting premise. Bait 3D. I'm a big shark movie fan, you know, starting from Jaws all the way through. There's something called the Tug Film Program, where you can actually request that the film be shown at your local theater. They'll give you a list of theaters that are apparently willing to do this, and you have to get a certain amount of people signed up for them to present the film at this theater. But I thought it was something really interesting. It's an Australian film. It stars Julian McMahon from Nip and Tuck.
Have you ever seen Nip Tuck?
Yeah.
Are you? It just showed up on Netflix.
I'm a casual fan of it.
It just showed up on Netflix to stream, so if anyone hasn't seen it, it's a horror-type show based around plastic surgery.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. It was originally, I think, a Showtime show, and it's pretty crazy. But
yeah, it went on to a life of its own.
I am very interested in seeing...
I mean, I believe it's going to come out on Blu-ray or DVD fairly soon, but I just thought it was cool that you know, the fans get a chance that if they can get enough people signed up to actually show it in a theater.
You're a fan of
I love the 3D movies, so I mean, you know, and I love shark movies, so a 3D movie...
Were you a fan of Jaws 3D?
Well...
I
saw that in the movies, too. Actually, Jaws 3D was going to be Creature from the Black Lagoon remade.
Oh, really?
And to the point that the whole script of the story, they basically erased the word creature, for the most part, and wrote shark.
That was the underwater...
It was the one...
underwater park.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Which, for people that know things about sharks, I don't really know the technicalities of it, but... Supposedly, whatever setting they put the shark in, I don't know if it's freshwater. I'm not sure exactly what the problem was, but it didn't make scientific sense for the shark to be in that area because they wouldn't be able to survive in that type of water. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but yeah, that was originally supposed to be a Creature from the Black Lagoon remake, and at the last minute they decided that Jaws would bring in more money than a creature film would. So they switched it over.
And I know you have something to say about Eli Roth's Goratorium.
Yeah, basically in September, he's going to, in Las Vegas, he's going to open up this type of like a haunted house walkthrough type thing called the Goratorium, which I would like to go out and see. I mean, I wouldn't make a special trip to Las Vegas for it. But, you know, if I was planning to go to Vegas, I would certainly plan it around the time that he's going to do that. It's going to run at least through the Halloween season, probably longer. Also, he's been just named as the director for the new Dracula film.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be starring Russell Crowe.
So how about that?
That should be interesting.
Russell Crowe as Dracula?
Yes. Yes, it was just announced.
Fan of that?
Casting? We'll see.
I don't know if I am. I don't know. Hey, don't forget, Monster Mania 22 will be coming to you August 17th through the 19th in Cherry Hill. Plus, tickets are still on sale for Monster Mania 23, September 28th through the 30th in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Now, last week, I know we really didn't talk too much about Hunt Valley, and I know you wanted to kind of bring it up a little bit. Your special guest for that one is Argento, who I can't wait to see.
Yeah, the daughter of Dario, probably most famous, I guess, to horror fans for the George Romero Land of the Dead. So it should be, it's going to be her first. Well, actually, she was in California for one day of a show. This is going to be her first weekend appearance in the United States. Also, we're going to have the Nightmare Girls. It's going to be Heather Langenkamp, Lisa Wilcox, Tuesday night.
That'll be great.
Yeah, Tuesday's awesome.
Yes.
We're really looking forward to seeing her again.
Alex Winter's going to be there.
Yes.
From everyone's going to know him from, he did a small part in The Lost Boys, but he was most known for probably Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and the movie Freaked.
Yeah, I think that the Lost Boys fans are really going to come out for that, though.
I hope so. I hope so. And plus, I see Gunnar Hansen's name.
Yeah, Gunnar's coming back. Gunnar and Monster Mania goes back a long time. We had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reunion, I guess, about 3-4 years ago now. And Gunnar just did our last show in March in New Jersey. So we figured we'd bring him down to Maryland. And looks like we're going to have Patricia Tallman from the
1990.
Yes, 1990.
Night of the Living Dead, which I am a huge fan of. Now, guys, look, please don't email me for tickets or to get put on the show, but I did put a little birdie in Dave's ear for this one because it's a bit. I'm a big fan of this of that film.
And also, we're going to have Tracy Lords. I'm sure you're going to be happy about that.
I will be happy. Hey, guys, make sure you visit MonsterMania.net and stay on top of all the guests, inside information, tons of just fun. Is that the right word, fun?
I would say that is absolutely the right word. I mean, the whole idea of coming to the show, I mean, besides meeting the stars and buying really cool stuff with the vendors, the best part of it is spending the weekend with people that like what you like, and it's just a great time.
Yeah, I totally agree, and everyone there has a blast. Also, make sure you look for us each and every Friday at MonsterManiaRadio.net. You can look for us on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review the show. Tweet to us at Rob Dimension and at MonsterManiaCon. Would you consider us retweeters?
To a degree. Sure.
Also, if you'd like to advertise with this podcast or even for Monster Mania, you can check out MonsterManiaRadio@gmail.com. Just send advertising in the subject header. Also, if you don't get enough of me, of Rob Dimension, you can listen to me each and every week at XOCpodcast.com. I'm on there with my, I'm not sure if we're friends or what we are. Steve
Lovers?
Carino. Maybe at times, but that's another that's another story.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah. We just passed 20,000 subscribers, so make sure you're one of them. And we'd love to have you tune in and listen to us. But this was so much fun to be a part of this show again.
Yep.
2 weeks in a row.
Great to see you, Rob. It's great to talk to everybody. And again, the feedback from the first show was phenomenal. Thank you.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to seeing everyone. We will be there in full force in August, and make sure you listen to us each and every week. And hey, we'll see you next week.